From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of August, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, away from the office this afternoon, hosting a Farm Legacy webinar in Mount Vernon. So no update of the actual commodity finishes for the day, but we will talk with Naomi Bloom. We'll hear about nutrient loss and how three farmers in the state are working to improve their lands. And then we'll finish up our conversation by discussing the weather forecast. Don Day will be here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Naomi. Thank you for being with us. I'm interested to know what you think of today's trade in context with yesterday, the information that came out last week from the Pro Farmer Crop Tour and where you think this marketplace might be headed.
Yeah, so today we're having what I would call an inside trading day. So prices for the corn and bean market have essentially just stuck within the trading range from yesterday. Of course, yesterday we had higher values because of the pro farmer numbers for corn coming in so much smaller than what the USDA had pegged. So that's definitely supportive. But now, between yesterday's price high and the price action today, it almost feels like the market is saying, okay, we need some more fresh, friendly news, or we might be running out of some short-term bullish steam here. And we're seeing that also with some of the technical indicators. The market is very overbought on RSI levels, close to 70. We're seeing the stochastic lines in overbought territory starting to potentially cross into sell signals. So if we don't get any fresh, friendly news this week, it wouldn't surprise me if we see a simple price pullback. I don't think we're going to crash and burn from here just because the fundamentals underlying this marketplace right now are so supportive. But maybe a 15 to 20 cent correction on corn or a 30 cent correction on soybeans might be in the wheelhouse here. We're also going to see some position squaring with the September grains because we're heading into first notice day. So that affects cash markets, basis markets, futures markets. First notice day is on Monday next week, so things have to get priced or rolled or closed out by the end of business on Friday. So we're going to see a little bit of that. And the other thing to keep in mind, what we're watching for outside markets this week, we've got some potentially big news from the Fed coming regarding interest rates and lots of just different outside market activities that can affect the market as much as just our regular grain market news.
Well, let's take up a couple of those things. One of them will be just to the north of your home state, Wisconsin. That would be Canada and the tariff and potential trade war that might be kicking off. They're the largest buyer of ethanol. Our export market, that is. That could pressure corn. I don't know whether it has yet at this time or not. And then, of course, there are issues still related with the war in Iran, and that could push energy prices even higher, and the war in Ukraine, which could constrain the amount of corn and or wheat that's coming out of both Ukraine and Russia. Which are the most important things you're watching?
Well, how about yes, yes, and yes? They're all very important. So, yeah, to your point, you know, with everything happening with Canada, they're pushing back against the United States, and they're throwing some data back at us and some different trade initiatives back in our face here to just try to keep that conversation going. It's not only ethanol that it affects dairy markets as well. So it is definitely an issue that we have to keep front and center because it does affect American agriculture. And then, of course, with things in the Middle East, monitoring that as well. Crude oil the last few days has had about a $4 to $5 pullback because things have simmered down over there a little bit in the Middle East. And then, of course, with Russia and Ukraine, the headlines continue to change every other day. Sounds like they're still trying to work on ways to make sure that they can get the grain markets exported and the grain product exported, but every other day it's a different headline. So balancing all of those things is going to be, I think, the trickiest component for the market for the rest of this week, along with month and position squaring. There's just a lot of facets to be monitoring. So Again, though, for those of you who are waiting for those higher prices, you know, big picture, they could come, but it might take a few months to get there. So if you've been kind of dragging your heels on any old crop sales, you've got September corn futures up near $5 today. It's a great opportunity. I did not think we would get this high in that September corn futures. And again, we're heading into first notice day, so those good values may start to slip away.
As we were talking yesterday with our analysts, they were of a mind that producers were taking advantage of these prices. Is that what you're hearing, or are the producers simply calling you and asking whether they should or not?
They are definitely making the sales because they are aware of the value that's there, and harvest feels like it might be starting to happen sooner than later in some places, just with as dry as it's been in some locations.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it, Naomi.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Today, we'll hear from our Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Episode 84 was just released. It is the third in a three-part series called Cover Crop Conversations. And we'll hear again from three farmers. This time, they'll provide advice about the hard lessons they've learned over the decades, and more importantly, the practical things someone new, or even experienced for that matter, can and likely should deploy. Our program comes from a longer webinar when the three sat down with University of Illinois Extension's Rachel Curry to talk openly about their operations. As we've told you in the past, they are from vastly different parts of the state. Adam Dahmer farms in deep southern Illinois, not so far from the Ohio River. Brent Fowler's farm sits halfway between the Illinois and the Mississippi Rivers in McDonough County. And Greg Thorne farms in the Driftless region of the northwestern corner of the Prairie State in Joe Davies County. Today, we'll hear their final thoughts on using cover crops, as explored in the webinar, and some down-to-earth practical management advice. We'll start with seeding a cover crop. Adam Dahmer likes to have it flown on, but not with a plane.
So planting, like I touched on earlier, we've tried it all. We've pretty well settled on aerial applying with a drone before harvest with in standing corn, and then we drill after soybean harvest. And with that being said, we still monitor soil moisture because there's of no advantage to throw seed out in a drought and then run the risk if we get a small rain and it germinates and dies because it doesn't have enough moisture to survive. So we do keep that. We keep that monitored as we look at establishing the crop, the cover crop. As we go into the spring, I've done it all from roller crimping to terminating the ryegrass right after break dormancy. Kind of where we're settling right now, we're taking the ryegrass out about after the second time we mow our yard. That's about ideal to take the ryegrass out because it is such a dense root structure. And with the weather patterns that we've experienced over the past 24 months, I can't have the amount of top growth that I like to have due to the extensive amount of rainfall that I've received in my area. The last two falls have been prohibitive on getting legumes established. If we can get legumes established, we'll still take the ryegrass out early and take the legumes to bloom. Maximum nitrogen production takes place right at bloom. So we try to get that to that point. As far as planting the cash crop and so forth, you've really got to pay attention to how your equipment is set up because you want good openers, you want good closing wheels, and you have to pay attention to what works best on your operation. About 10 years ago, a group of farmers in my area, we all got together and tried many different types of closing wheels and so forth to see what was working best and did some studies. That proved to be excellent research for all of us. And that helped guide what it was we were looking at. But still, nonetheless, what was working on some farms weren't working for other farmers. So termination-wise, when we look at terminating the cover crop, I've done it with a drone. We do it with a ground rig. Last year, we did not get it killed as timely as I wished I would have, and that cost us some heartache as we move forward. But all in all, it's that's pretty well how we approach it.
Again, that's Adam Fowler. He's from Williamson County, Illinois, and just put forth a 2.5-minute primer on managing a cover crop. Now let's turn to Brent Fowler. Again, he's in the western part of Illinois, in the middle part of the state, and has some advice, not exactly on cover crops, but on the transition many producers make on the way to cover crops. That's with no-till.
Yeah, so this is one thing that I was kind of excited to talk about. And the reason why that is because I tried no-till. It's been about 25 years ago, and mistakes were made. And we said, you know, I just remember thinking, I'm done with this no-till stuff. This, no way. And I was sitting here this morning, and I was making a list of the mistakes that I made. And number one, so this would have been in around 2000, and we used a John Deere 750 drill. We still have that drill. But we quit tillage cold turkey on the field this we tried this on. And, you know, I think that might be a little bit of a mistake. You know, if I picked up my neighbor's field here and the heavy, heavy tillage, you know, when that field was corn stalks before beans, I don't know. I don't think I would plan on no-till on the beans. I would probably take a vertical tillage tool and chop up that residue, because it takes a few years to get your microorganisms really cooking, you know, really breaking down the residue. And residue is a problem for us anyway. So that's probably the first mistake we made, was probably not trying to gradually work into the no-till. The next one was something we didn't do. We did not increase our seeding rate. And so, you know, when you're in no-till, rough conditions, cereal rye, all this stuff, I think it's important to increase your soybean seeding rate. We did increase our down pressure, but we probably didn't increase it enough. I have one thing from no-till in these years, it takes a lot of no-till sometimes to penetrate this really hard ground in certain conditions, especially on the really white dirt. On the black dirt, it seems like you can get by with anything, but on the really tough timber soil, that can turn to concrete. Now, maybe the cover crops might help with that. But another thing that we didn't do that was probably the easiest thing in the world to do, that if I could go back and tell my younger self of 25 years ago, if I could only do one thing differently, I'd tell myself to plant the beans at an angle. So easy to do. Does cost nothing. And what happens is, you know, if we, you know, we didn't know, I didn't know any better. I didn't do any research before I just went into no-till. And I didn't talk to anybody who was doing it. So those were probably my first mistake. But, you know, I didn't plant at an angle. I planted it exactly straight, the same as we planted the corn. And what we find now that happens is that we get a disc opener that gets stuck on top of the prior year's corn stalk row, and we're not getting the depth on those rows. And so if you're on, you know, 15-inch row beans, and you have half of them directly on top of prior year corn row, that's not going to go well. So planting on angle, and that gets those disc openers off of those corn rows for a higher percentage of the time. So that was a big one. That was a big mistake. So what, you know, what we had happen? We just didn't, for a couple of years, we had horrible stands of beans. We didn't increase our seeding rate. We didn't have enough down pressure, and we didn't plant at an angle, and we'd had a horrible stand. And that caused a lot of our, I'm sure that was a lot of our yield problem. We had really thin stands. But, you know, another part of it, being 23 at the time, I did not know that the beans would be shorter. And now I know that that's to be expected, but we're not trying to grow. We're not in a competition to see how tall of plants we can get. We want pods. We want as many pods, doesn't matter how tall it is. But, you know, when you're 23, and the beans are shorter, that's a problem. And I remember being in the combine, and you know, we didn't have at the in year 2000, we didn't really have a good, we didn't have scales on the arc wagon like we do now. We didn't have really have a good way of weighing a test anyways. But I'll be honest with you, just in the combine, seeing that the beans were shorter, I had already made up my mind. I did not want no-till. But now that, you know, now that I'm older and I know to expect that, I'm not going to say it. It's still a little hard when you drive down the road and you look at the neighbor's beans and they're 10 inches taller than yours. That's still, it's still a little hard even for me, but it's definitely hard. It's definitely harder for my dad and my oldest son.
The practical advice Brent Fowler really is talking about there is to discuss the transitions that you want to make with producers who have already made them, planting on an angle or just moving the line 7.5 inches over will be really helpful in no-till. And what kinds of things might you expect and differences in a growing crop because of the no-till environment? Adam Dahmer said it best, really, as he was wrapping up that webinar with Rachel Curry.
Do your own research. Take part of your farm. Try new things. Pay attention to your equipment on what's working, what's not working. And don't be afraid to spend a couple $1,000s on your planter to completely enhance your operation based off performance. Get out of the tractor seat and see what's actually taking place on your operation.
You know, from my earlier story, I guess I'm probably a poster child for what can go wrong if you don't do any research. But, you know, one of the things that that we do on our farm that I think is different than almost all of our farmers in this area is we follow our bean combine with our old 750 drill, and we put triticale up the most erodible spots immediately after bean harvest. Because, and the reason why I think that's important is we don't have a lot of erosion problems on corn stalks before beans, but we do have horrible erosion at times on bean stubble before corn. And I remember several years ago when we, after we had done these tests, and we had proven that the reduced till and what that was just as profitable or maybe a little more profitable. I remember being so excited that the no-till was we're gonna be done with all the erosion. We were gonna be done with gullies. It's gonna be so nice to not have to deal about gullies. And you know what? It wasn't the case. And I don't want to get into this, but we actually, after no-tilling for so many years, our residue decomposes so fast. It's shocking. And we started to have erosion trouble. I remember reading about that from an old guy who wrote that, and I thought he was crazy, but that happened to us. And that's where cover crops come in. And we really see the erosion still happen on soybean stubble. So if nothing else, if you don't do anything else with cover crops, if you don't want to do the whole field with cereal rye or triticale, if nothing else, take a small drill and at least drill those really erodible spots, the repeat offenders. That's what we call it on our farm, where you fill them in and they wash again, even with no-till. At least on those repeat offenders, go in and get some cover crop on those areas. Because the cover crop is the silver bullet when it comes to erosion control.
We as farmers grow plants. That's what we do.
This is Greg Thorne. He's the farmer from Joe Davies County.
Whether we use those as an income source, you know, corn and beans and wheat and various other plants, using cover crops, we're just planting or seeding different plants. One nice thing with these cover crops, they're out there longer throughout the year, which we should be delighted to see as they're again as farmers, because we see more green in the field. And that actually relates back to more soil life. You know, they're getting cleaner water, cleaner air. The whole system was what was shown here today. But, you know, everything that we should be doing should be is to regenerate the soil. And I believe the participants here today has shown that anyway.
Practical advice from three no-tillers who use cover crops. It's part of the Cover Crops Conversation series on the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction podcast. You can find it on our website at willag.org under the podcast tab. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start in the United States. We've had a lot of rain in many parts of the Corn Belt, but there's sunshine. They were hoping for a little warmer weather as well. Looks like all of that's going to take place. Can you tell me about the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's a very favorable regime. First of all, the amount of rain that we see over the next week will be considerably less than it's been. It won't be completely dry, but the activity will be down considerably. Now, the warmer temperatures are coming, especially to the western areas, Iowa, Missouri, parts of northern and western Illinois. You get a little bit further east, temperatures are going to be closer to average for the eastern Corn Belt and the Ohio Valley area. We're still going to be very warm down in parts of the southern plains, but the overall trend is this: less rain and a bit warmer.
And when you look into September, do you see things changing at all?
We do. In fact, it really looks like really beginning at the first of the month, early next week, we're going to see patterns shifting around a little bit. We're going to actually see some cooler weather invade the Pacific Northwest, parts of western and central areas of Canada. I'd call it the first cool front of late summer. That's going to bring about a shift in the jet stream pattern and realign things, meaning the high pressure center, which has been over the central and south central U.S. for several weeks, is going to shift more to the southeastern United States, and that's going to allow low pressure to slip into the western half of the country. And when that happens, as we get into late August and early September, this is when we need to start watching the Atlantic a little bit more for the possibility of tropical development, because that's a much more favorable pattern.
So when that does happen, if the Atlantic becomes active and there's tropical development, does that mean a wet sort of September for us, or do we just not know yet?
We don't know yet, because we got to watch to see. Fighting El Nino is really hard to get the Atlantic tropical season going. That's really been knocking it down so far. However, you can expect that if we do see that increased activity, that parts of the east and southeast should see an uptick in precipitation. We also may see moisture come into the southwestern United States from tropical activity in the Pacific. So I think both the Atlantic and the Pacific are going to have a big say in how September's going to go.
Hey, thank you much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.